Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter 1, Text 32, Questions by Vidura. Vidura is asking questions of Uddhava. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Please tell me whether Akrura, the son of Shvalpaka, is doing well. Akrura is a faultless soul, surrendered unto the personality of Godhead. Akrura once lost his mental equilibrium due to his ecstasy of transcendental love, and he fell down on the dust of a road which was marked with the footprints of Lord Krishna. Purport. When Akrura came to Vrindavan in search of Krishna, he saw the footprints of the Lord on the dust of Nandagram, and at once fell on them in ecstasy of transcendental love. This ecstasy is possible for a devotee who is fully absorbed in incessant thoughts of Krishna. Such a pure devotee of the Lord is naturally faultless because he is always associated with the supreme pure personality of Godhead. Constant thought of the Lord is the antiseptic method for keeping oneself free from the infectious contamination of the material qualities. The pure devotee of the Lord is always in company with the Lord by thinking of him. Yet, in the particular context of time and place, the transcendental emotions take a different turn, and this breaks the mental equilibrium of the devotee. Lord Chaitanya displayed the typical example of transcendental ecstasy, as we can understand from the life of this incarnation of the Lord. Om Anjana Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Militamena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah. In these verses of Bhagavatam, Vidura is inquiring from Uddhava that he will explain something about the glories of Krishna's family, the Yadavas, the Yadava Vamsha Mahima, you could say, the glories of the different members of the Yadava dynasty, Krishna's family, Parivara. So it's understood that, or it's explained that Akrura was actually the uncle of Krishna. Exactly how? How is that? Who is he the brother of? Akrura? But that term is used. He's uncle. Someone who knows these lineages, they can figure out why. He's called the, what's that? Mama? Chacha? What do you call? Chacha. He's the Chacha. Krishna Kachacha. Brother of Vasudev. So Akrura, you can see when you read the Bhagavatam, Akrura is a very enigmatic personality, very puzzling personality. And one minute we see him rolling in the dust of the footprints of Krishna, and the next minute we see him involved with a conspiracy. And of course, what is his whole mission here? We're getting something of a, you can say, a small mention of this whole pastime, that Akrura is coming to Vrindavan. And he's in great ecstasy. He's meditating on the Lord. But as soon as he sees something connected with the Lord, that object becomes an udipan. Udipan means a stimulant, which stimulates his sthayibhava. The permanent mood of love that's in his heart becomes stimulated by seeing something or experiencing something connected with the object of his love. For example, a mother may have a son, and the son grows up and he goes away to America to college, and he only comes home, he may not come home for a few years, and the family may not be so rich to go back and forth. So he says, Mom, I'll be there for 4 or 5 years. So after a couple of years, the lady, this mother, she hasn't seen her son, so she walks upstairs to his bedroom, assuming they have an upstairs and they have separate bedrooms, but she walks and she opens the door and she looks in the bedroom. and she sees in the corner of the bedroom the track shoes, the running shoes of her son. And she sits on the bed and she looks at the shoes of her son, who's in America studying, and she thinks, oh yes, I remember my son. When he was in high school, he wore these shoes, and he entered the track meet, and he ran, and he won the medal, the gold medal. And she's looking at those shoes, and she starts thinking of her son, and she starts crying. She's looking at a pair of shoes, track shoes, you know, these running shoes, whatever you call them, sports shoes, and she's crying. Then her husband comes upstairs, and she sees the wife sitting on the bed crying. Oh, what's wrong? What's wrong with you? Oh, nothing. Don't worry about it. And he looks and he tries to understand the situation. My wife is sitting there. She's staring at a pair of shoes and she's crying. So the husband, at first he may think his wife is crazy. How is it she's looking at a pair of shoes and she's crying? Because those shoes are connected to her lover, her beloved child. She has Vatsalya Bhav. Or Vatsalya Rati. She's attached to her son in a mood of a parent, a loving mother, motherly love, parental love, Vatsalya. So when she sees, because in her heart, that the mental equilibrium means that this is described that Akrura, he has mental equilibrium. Mental equilibrium means that within your mind, you're always relishing different aspects of your lover. You're thinking about their form, you're remembering their sweet talks, you're thinking about their activities and different things that you did together. That's always residing in the heart. And sometimes that's called sthayi bhav, permanent mood of love. And sometimes when you see something externally that's directly connected to your lover, then that is like putting petrol on a fire. If you have a small fire and you put some petrol on it, what happens? Boom. Right? Boom. Fire comes up. You understand. You follow. You have some small fire and you put petrol. Jump. So the small fire is like sthayi bhav, the permanent relationship of love between the pure devotees and the Lord. And then something they may see becomes like petrol. And poof, the fire goes up. And when you throw petrol on a fire, it makes a sound. Have you ever done it? You throw some petrol, it goes boom. Because there's combustion. And there's sound and there's light. There's form, there's big flame comes, poof, and there's heat, and you become frightened. So there's like vibhavas and anubhavas. Oh, yeah, this is the udipan. But then the anubhavas, you know, because when you hear the sound, then you become frightened. So these are the different anubhavas. This is like how ras is produced. So the same thing, and Akrura, he has his mental equilibrium. That this is my Ishtadev is Krishna. He is my Lord. And I'm living in Mathura. But I'm always thinking of him. What's he doing now? But he's not seeing anything in Mathura to remind him directly of Krishna. Because it's a big city. He's seeing chariots and horses. He's not seeing cows and gopis carrying water pots on their head. It's a big city. Like in Delhi. You're living in Delhi. How many ladies do you see walking around with clay pots on their head? None. Zero. How many peacocks do you see? None. Zero. How many cows and bullock carts? You don't see, occasionally. So Akrura wasn't seeing anything tangible or physical or external to remind him. So he was peaceful. Oh, my Lord is there. But now when he's coming to Vrindavan, he's thinking, oh, I'm going to Vrindavan. Then he starts imagining, what will I see? I'm going to see my Lord. He starts anticipating. And everyone knows in psychology that the anticipation is... at least the material world, the anticipation of an activity produces greater pleasure than the activity itself. The anticipation, because the anticipation is within the mind. So we're thinking, oh, I'm going to get married, and my wife is going to be so nice, and we're going to do this and that, and all these things a young man is thinking before he's married. And he's anticipating, and so many ideas and schemes and plans, and then he gets married, and all of a sudden, boop, his huge imagination of what it's going to be and what it will be, all of a sudden the reality hits him in the face. Boom! Oh, wait a minute. And then, but in his mind, he was relishing so much happiness. Oh, she'll be so submissive and so sweet, and she'll talk so nice, and she'll encourage me in my work, and she'll cook so nice, and we'll joke together, and we'll go places, and we'll enjoy life together. Right? And then you get married, you say, oh, hey, Baba, what happened? I mean, not always. Sometimes there's the quote-unquote the ideal marriage. At least they write books about it or make movies about it. So Akura, he's like this. He has this mental equilibrium. Mental equilibrium is a way the prophet's saying he is relishing his permanent devotional mood. Just like the mother who has a son who's in America going to school and she's living in Delhi, she has a permanent devotional mood, a permanent mood of love. He is my son. As soon as I became pregnant, I became attached. I became connected. A sambandha. This is my son, or child, daughter, whatever. He's in my womb. And it became tighter and tighter and tighter. By association, the connection and attachment became more and more. Then when he came out, oh my God, then the attachment went 100 times. So that attachment, that permanent relationship between the mother and the son, that is a sthayibhav. Sthayibhav. Like stita, or stan, means fixed, the position. Bhav means the fixed mood of bhav, love. So she's cooking for her husband, serving husband, family, but so many times in her mind she's thinking, oh, my son, how is he? Is he okay? Are his studies going on nicely? And then when she goes up in the room and then she sees his shoes, oh, and then she starts crying. So Akura is having that experience. He's coming on the chariot. And because Krishna's feelings for Krishna are always in his heart. So when he's entering the land of Vrindavan, the land of Vrindavan is Prem Dham. Every molecule of Vrindavan, every molecule, the land and the earth and the trees, everything is radiating and surcharged with Krishna's love. Because everything in Vrindavan is dedicated towards the center. The center is only one. But in Mathura, there's many centers. There's this king and that king and this prince and that prince and this house and this bhavan and this palace and this market, and many, many things. And everyone has different interests. Because it's not Vrindavan. But in Vrindavan, every single atom is connected to Krishna. That's why it's called Prem Dham, Shri Dham Vrindavan, Prem Dham. So therefore, as soon as Akura is entering into that atmosphere, his mind is becoming, the vibration is entering into his mind. Even the thought, the anticipation, as we mentioned, the anticipation and the expectation. There's some very interesting teachings in this life of Akura, which you can read in the Bhagavatam. We were glancing briefly this morning, where Prabhupada is saying that the example of Akura going to Vrindavan should be the example for all of us. You must have seen in the Krishna book. Akura is teaching the process. He is teaching the process how to enter Vrindavan. Just like there's a process, you want to go to America and get a job with a multinational company. There's a process. First you have to have a work permit or a visa, and you have to have an agent and an immigration agent or a lawyer, all these things. You know better than me. You can't just walk into the airport and get a ticket. Give me a ticket to New York. I'm going to work there. They say, well, hey, wait, where's your visa? Where's your work permit? Where this and that? You know. So there's a process for going to America and working in some company. Similarly, there's a process to go to Vrindavan. There's a process. There's a way to enter Vrindavan. It's not by National Highway, whatever they call it, Delhi National Highway, NH, number 5 or 7 or whatever they call it. You know. It's not by the highway you enter Vrindavan. It's by Mahajanapant, the path of the Mahajanas. So Akura is acting as a Mahajan, a great soul. And what is his teaching? He's teaching how to enter Vrindavan. Radhaparta Sarati Ki Jai. Well, Mahajan means a great teacher. Mahajan is a great teacher who's teaching spiritual principles, spiritual precepts. So Akura, as Prabhupada's mentioning in the 10th canto commentary, Akura is teaching the process of how to enter Vrindavan. So we have to engage the heart, The heart must be engaged. The mind must be engaged. The senses must be engaged. And the tongue must be engaged. This is all part of the process of entering Vrindavan. And of course, the most important aspect of the process of entering Vrindavan is the position of the mind. The man. Man means mind, right? Man and man. The mind. What is the position of the mind? So in the Bhagavatam, in the 10th canto, you can see the description of Akrura. First it's describing his mindset. How did he set his mind? And it's describing that he started meditating, because he was always meditating. But he started having expectations. So this means that anyone who wants to approach Vrindavan, which means the spiritual world, within his mind, he should have some expectations. I don't know if you know English, but I can't explain what that means in Hindi, but expectation means you want something that you're expecting or something that you want to happen. In other words, when you go to apply for a job, you have an expectation that he will give you the job. You're expecting and you're hoping that you'll receive, your application will be accepted and you'll receive the job. So Akrura, he had expectations, which you can read in the 10th canto. He was expecting, I am going to Vrindavan. I am going to the land of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of God, in my Ishtadev. And when I go there, I'm expecting that I will meet the Lord and I will see his lotus feet. I'm expecting that I will see his lotus feet. And I know, because I'm his relative, I'm his uncle, that he will put his hand, I'm expecting that he will put his hand on my head. Just as he put his hand on the head of different demigods, and Akrura starts remembering, Krishna with his divine hand, he blessed different demigods, he gave them blessings with his hands, and awarded them different kingdoms and gave them protection from the demons. So in the same way, that hand of Krishna will come on my head. I will be blessed by Krishna's hand. And he will give me, and then I expect also that when I have darshan, that when I have darshan of Krishna, when I see Krishna, then all my material attachments, any material attachments I have, or any impurities that are within my mind, any dirt or contamination, anartha or aparada or anything that's in my mind, it will all be washed away. It will go away. So Akrura is having these expectations. He's thinking, this will happen and that will happen. And then of course, in terms of perfection, we see that different devotees attain perfection by different practices of devotion. This is very known to us. So Shukadeva Goswami, he actually realized Krishna and he attained perfection by speaking about Krishna. Is it right? By doing kirtan, sankirtan, glorifying the Lord. Kirti means the fame, right? Kirti means the fame. Speaking about the fame of the Lord. But when it says sankirtan, that doesn't mean that you just open your mouth and you have a big speaker. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. And you make big noise with a big speaker, 10,000 watts. This is not because sankirtan means samyak kirtan. Means the mouth must be there, the mind must be there, the heart must be there. It means the full atma. Atma means mind, body and soul. This is sankirtan. Just to make big noise, Hare Krishna, but your mind is thinking of this, your heart is desiring this. You have so many samskaras, vishayi samskaras, desires for material things lying in the heart. And you're Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. This is not sankirtan. So sankirtan is not a cheap thing, sankirtan. Because generally they say sankirtan means you get together with 10 people, a group of people get together, congregational chanting. This is sankirtan. Well, you can get 20 parrots, you can get 20 totas together and they can chant, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. You get 20 parrots, tota, and you can train them to chant, or maybe 50, and they'll make a good noise. Big noise of 50 parrots, 50 tota get together, Hare Krishna. But is that sankirtan? Because their heart and mind is not there. Their atma is not there. Sankirtan is not such a cheap thing. That's why, so this is the Sankirtan. He was chanting, he was doing full kirtan, he was kirti. He was fully glorifying the fame of Krishna to Parikshit. And Parikshit attained perfection by shravanam, kirtan, hearing. And then Lakshmi Devi, her perfection is that she was always doing padasevanam, humble service to the Lord, just massaging his feet. She's the queen of Vaikuntha, Lakshmi Devi. And she's doing the work of Amalish. Amalish, right? Masuswala. Masuswali. Like here, you know, you want to, some lady wants a massage, she pays 20 rupees and gets some Bengali lady to rub her back or something, right? You know, you want a massage. Who does malish? In the Indian society, who does malish? You know who does malish? The same person that cuts the hair, right? The hair cutter. The barber. At least in Vrindavan, in the villages, the person who's cutting the hair, he also does this work, malish. So what is this? This is considered muchi work. Hair cutting is very dirty work. And touching people's bodies. So this Lakshmi Devi, she's become like a barber. She's massaging the feet of Narayan. You imagine some king? A king will have so many people. He'll have his barber, he'll have his personal barber, his personal dresser, his bather, his massager. The queen doesn't usually do that. But that's her perfection, it's padasevanam. Such a humble position. But now Akrura is also one of those examples. We're discussing this verse is about Akrura. Akrura. Well, he attained perfection by vandanam, prayers. So this is another way, this is another part of the process for entering Vrindavan. How do we enter Vrindavan? By prayers. Specifically. And that's why the Acharyas, especially the Gaudiya Vaishnava Acharyas, have given us so many stavas and stutis and prayers to glorify Vrindavan, Brindadevi Ashtakam, Vrindavan Ashtakam, Yamuna Ashtakam, Madhur Ashtakam. So many prayers. So the devotees and Gaudiya Vaishnavas, they day to day they're chanting these Ashtakams in prayers. Because these prayers, they create the mood. And they give the deep understanding of what is Vrindavan. So this is one part is the mind we're expecting. We can ask ourselves, how many of us are thinking, yes, someday, if Krishna is pleased, because this is described in Bhagavatam, someday if Krishna is pleased with my service, he will give me his darshan. Because this is what Akura is teaching in the Bhagavatam, this is in the further 10th canto. He's saying, oh yes, I'm expecting that I will have darshan of Krishna. I'm expecting it. I will see Krishna, sakshat darshan. Because I'm going to Vrindavan. And Krishna lives in Vrindavan. So is Vrindavan a place of geography? Is it a place in the geographical world? The topographical world is located 90 miles southeast of Delhi, or 135 kilometers. Is it like that? No, it's not like that. Vrindavan is everywhere. Vrindavan is when your consciousness is there, then you're in Vrindavan. Oh, I'm going to Vrindavan. Really? You can say, I'm transporting my body. Someone says, oh, Prabhu, I'm going to Vrindavan for the weekend. Really? And you go to Vrindavan and all you think about is cricket, politics, and all you talk about is food, and oh, that lassi is nice, and oh, that lassi over there, and Bankim Bihari lassi is very good. I really like that cream on the top, you know, that thick cream. But you know, that's good. But you know, in Lajpat Nagar, there's a new shop. They also have very good lassis. Acha? Kitna rupiah? Oh, you get a very big body of glass, only 10 rupees. Acha? Oh, what's the address? So going to Vrindavan, talking lassi kata. Lassi kata. Not Hari kata. Hari lila, no. And then the ladies go to Vrindavan, and then they go, oh, did you see that new shop in Loy Bazaar? Oh, so many nice clothes. I don't know where they get. They have all these things from Arisa, Arisan saris and batik and all these. Oh, really? What's that shop? Ah, some Agarwal. You'll see it when you go down there. Acha. I'll go tomorrow morning. So the next day, the husband says, look, we should go on Prikama, Vrindavan today. We're only here. No, I have some things to do in Loy Bazaar. Acha, tike, chilo. I'll go by myself. So he goes Vrindavan Prikama by himself. And the wife gets on a rickshaw and she goes there with a big fat bunch of money in her pocket, big wad of rupees, right? And she goes and finds that shop. Oh, look at that. Oh, this is a ricin. Oh, this is very nice. That looks so cute. Oh, I like the yellow one. Yeah. Okay, one of those and one green one. So she goes to Vrindavan only to do shopping. And when she's in Delhi, what does she do? She goes shopping. So is this going to Vrindavan? This is not going to Vrindavan. So when we say I'm going to Vrindavan, we can say, yes, I'm going to transport my body. My husband and I are transporting our bodies from Delhi to Vrindavan. Because when we get in Vrindavan, we'll do the same thing we do in Delhi. Eat, sleep, buy, shop. Eat, sleep, and shop. A few things we won't do because we're on a yatra, so we'll try to control ourselves. Because when you're on yatra, you're supposed to control yourself to some extent. But Akura is going on a yatra. He's going on a braj yatra. He's getting in his car. His car is Kamsa's chariot with 8 horses. And it's all solid gold. And the horses have little things on their ears, you know, to keep them from looking sideways. They're called blinders. They wear this little thing like this. There's mouthpiece and there's little, you see. It's called blinders because if the horses are very jittery, very Rajaguni type. So if they see something, they keep this little leather things. You ever saw on the side? So they look straight forward. But if you have these things on, you know, all you can see, Guru Seva, you know, Thakurji, Guruji, you know, because you only can see straight. If you're only seeing straight, that means you're walking straight. And if you're seeing straight and walking straight, that means you're behaving straight. But as soon as you start looking crooked, then you start acting crooked. So this kataksha means crooked. So Krishna, he's always looking crooked. He never looks straight. He never looks you straight in the eye. He can't. Like when Yashoda says, were you stealing butter? Well, you know, I don't know. Who said that? I don't steal butter. He won't look Yashoda right in the eye. He can't. Krishna is impossible for Krishna to look at Yashoda because if you're lying, you know you can't lie to your mother. Did you steal that yogurt? No, I don't. Who said that? You know, he will look at, and she doesn't bother saying, look at me, because she already knows his nature. She doesn't say, look at my eye, look at my face. Now tell me, did you? Because if someone's lying, and they're not a politician, because they're expert at it. But if you're not a politician and you lie, it becomes visible in your eyes. The politicians, they can lie day and night, and you can't detect it. They're professional. But an ordinary person, if you look at them and say, did you take my tape player? And you look at you lock vision with them, they're going to melt. Because I was a temple president for 4 years. So I had to sometimes bust some people. You know, people do misbehavior and so then I would catch them and I say, okay, I have to ask you something. And I would just watch their eye movements. I just look at them. Because, you know, we have some prabhav, you know. So then I would understand. Even if they say anything, they say, oh, no, I didn't take it. I said, okay, no problem. Fine, thank, goodbye. And then I would make my decision. So this is Akura is teaching that going to Vrindavan means there's preparation. Just like you say, oh, you tell your wife, okay, next week we're going to Paris. So does that mean that she's not going to do, for 1 week, it's going to be business as normal? She says, okay, let's go to Paris. We'll get on the flight at 10 o'clock. She'll make so much, she'll be busy 24 hours a day preparing to go to Paris next week. I'm going to Paris. Oh, what's the weather like? I need this clothes and that clothes, and I need, and then this and that, and so many things. So the process of going to Vrindavan, Akura got in Kamsa's chariot, and he taught the process. He had expectation, just like you're going to Paris. Oh, I expect I'm going to see this thing, and this Eiffel Tower, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that, and all these things are available. So Akura is going to Vrindavan, so he's expecting, oh, I'm going to Vrindavan. I will have darshan of Krishna, if he's pleased. If he's pleased with my swabhav, if he's pleased with my heart and mind and activities, he will give me darshan. And when I see Krishna, what will happen to me? And I will be totally washed of all my kam, krodh, lobh, moha, matsarya. It will wash off my heart and mind. I will become pure and effulgent and full of feelings and love for the Lord. This is all described in the Bhagavatam, 10th canto. So here we're getting a little viewpoint of Akura. But the glories of Akura are more mentioned in the 10th canto. Many different pastimes with Akura and Krishna. Because he's a great devotee. So he's teaching that, oh, I'm going to Vrindavan. Well, let me read about Vrindavan Mahima. Let me hear about Vrindavan, the glory, so I can adjust my consciousness. It's the same thing we do. If we're going to Paris, we get some, like your husband may come home from work and he says, oh, guess what? Good news. I just got a promotion. I'm being transferred to Paris. Acha? And I'm going to get twice as much or five times more pay and so many facilities. So as soon as the wife hears that, she's going to start, oh, I better read about Paris. Let me read about France. Let me hear about it. She'll become educated, right? So we're going to Vrindavan. Our process is we want to go to Vrindavan in the Nitya Seva of Radha and Krishna, in our Sarup, in our Siddha Sarup, in our spiritual form. So let me read about Vrindavan. Let me hear about Vrindavan. And let me also cultivate expectations. Because most of us are dull. We're completely dull. We're like stone-like. Jada buddhi, is it right? Jada buddhi, like stone-like intelligence. We don't like think. We think so much about Maya. We make so many plans and expectations. Oh, I'm going to Shimla for the weekend. I'm going to Hardwar, and I'm going to this 5-star. We're going to this, and we're going to go swimming in this place, and then we'll do tennis, and then we'll play golf, and then we have so many things we think about. But do we have expectations? Oh, I will go to Vrindavan, and I will see the Lord, and He'll put His hand on my head. You know, we read the story of Prahlad Maharaj, and the Sringadevi put His lotus hand on Prahlad's head. So what's his qualification to have the hand of the Lord on his head? Just like Akura, when he was going to Vrindavan, he was thinking, oh, that hand of the Lord which blessed the demigods, and that hand of the Lord which wiped the perspiration, the pasina, that hand of the Lord which wiped the pasina, or removed the perspiration from the faces of the gopis after they were fatigued from rasa dancing. So he's thinking, yes, that hand, that hat, that hand of the Lord, that padmahat, that lotus hand of the Lord, that was engaged in the service of the gopis, removing the perspiration from their faces in such a loving, tender, beautiful way. I will see that same Lord. I, Akura, I will go have darshan of that same beautiful Lord, Govinda Damodara Madhaveti, that Damodara, that Madhav. And as he did for the gopis, and as he blessed the demigods, and as his hand was, you know, blessing so many devotees, I am also his bhakta. I am also his devotee. And I'm also serving him. And I am expecting that when I meet him, he will put his hand on my head. And then what will happen to me when I contact Krishna, when that Divya Sarup, that spiritual Satchidananda Vigraha, when he touches me? Just like if you have some fire, you put some stick in fire, you have some fire, and you put some lakris, a piece of wood in it, then it gets on fire, then you take, now that stick has fire on it, then you can go burn up some cloth, because that stick is carrying fire, so it has potency. So Krishna's hand has so much potency, unlimited potency, because he's God, Bhagavan. So when that hand comes on my head, oh, then this is going to happen, that's going to happen. This is all called expectation. So this is all, it's called ashabandha, hope against hope. That a devotee he's captivated, he's enthralled by the possibilities. I will, like they have this song, was it big in Braj a few years ago? You know, da 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 da, kaha malenge. Hello, Narayan? Hello, Narayan. It's like village song with some bhajan in Hindi. It's like Narada Muni is calling Narayan. He's calling on a telephone. So the song goes, like old-fashioned telephone, not like ringtones, old-fashioned. And then it goes, hello. And then Narayan says, hello. And then Narada Muni says, ah, Narayan, acha. And then Narayan says, so, you know, kaise, hey, Narad, how are you? Then Narad starts singing, kaha malenge, kaha malenge. Kaha malenge means, you know, where will we meet or something, right? Kahan malenge? Yeah, kaha malenge, ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta. And people in a brudge, they like all this kind of simple stuff. So that was like the number one best hit seller for like 5 years. Everywhere you go, every cassette player, kaha malenge. Then it rings again. Hello? Ah, acha. And then this time it's Radharani calling Shyam Sundar. She says, oh, Shyam? Ha, acha. Radhika? Ha. Kaha malenge, da-da-da, kaha malenge. Oh Radharani, where will we be, you know? Where will we be? So this is what occurs. This is called expectation. I'm expecting to meet my beloved. And this is, of course, this comes automatically at the level of Bhav. But he's an exemplar. He's a teacher. He's a Mahajan. Akura is a Mahajan of teaching us that we approach Vrindavan by having expectation. I will have darshan of the Lord if he is pleased with my service. That's what he's saying. But he's saying, I'm expecting this. I want this. I'm going to Vrindavan. This is the land of Krishna. He's always there. It's either Prakrit or Aprakrit. It's Prakrit, Prakrit or manifest. If I have Bhav, Prakat and Aprakat. So it's Prakat or Aprakat. It's manifest. Krishna will be manifest in Vrindavan to me if Bhav is Prakat within me. Bhav. If I have Bhav, if within my heart, Bhav is manifested within my heart, then when I go to Vrindavan with these very eyes, I will see the Lord by His mercy. Bhagavan Kripa. But if I go to Vrindavan and Bhav is not Prakat in my heart, then Krishna's Aprakat. But it's still going on. This is an extremely specialized point of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. We are Gaudiya Vaishnavas. We are following the teachings of the golden avatar, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And we are Vaishnavas because our Ishtadev is Vishnu in the supreme form, Swayam Bhagavan Sri Krishna. So there are so many Vaishnavas. Some worship Narayan, Vishnu, Ram. They worship different avatars. There are even people that worship Kalki. There's a group in Vrindavan. They have a headquarters on the Prikama Marg. You must have seen. They have a headquarters there, Kalki. Kalki Mandir or whatever they call it. Yeah, they have their headquarters. So there's people in India that worship different avatars of the Lord. And some people worship devatas. And these are different aspects of the Lord. So, practically speaking, there's millions and millions of people that are Vaishnavas. But if you examine all the different religious viewpoints of the Lord, all these different Sri Vaishnavism and Madhvas and all these, you'll find one thing in common. The common denominator of all these different Vaishnav expressions of Vaishnav faith, of Vaishnav Shraddha, the common denominator is that they are all following in the context, they're all following in the context of Varnashram Dharma. They're all underneath the umbrella of Varnashram Dharma, which means that their concept is Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha. What that means is that their goal is Moksha. And in all of these Vaishnava religious systems, the spiritual world, which Moksha, because there's also Swarga Moksha. If you're very good in your Kshatriya Dharma, you go to Swarga. You can read in Mahabharata. So there's different types of Moksha. But in terms of spiritual or transcendental moksha, all of these different Vaishnav faiths and religions, their conception is that moksha means that if I become Shuddh Bhakta, pure Narayan Bhakta or whatever, Ram Bhakta, I will attain moksha and go to the spiritual world. That the spiritual world, Vaikuntha, is Paravyom, it's far away, and that's where the Lord will be there. My Ishadev is there in the spiritual world, in Ayodhya, in the planet called Ayodhya. Ayodhya, Ram is there, and I'm a Ram Bhakta, I will go there. This is the conception everywhere across the board. But this is not the conception in Gaudiya Vaishnavism, which you may not even know. the conception that Lord Chaitanya introduced and what he explained is that the spiritual world is right here, right now. That's why only in Gaudiya Vaishnavism you have this concept of aprakrit and aprakrita, was it? Prakat. Oh. Aprakat and Prakat. Only in Gaudiya Vaishnavism. What is it? You can read all the literature of all Sri Vaishnavism, Madhva, everything. You can read all their literature. You won't find this concept. Ram was here in Treta Yuga 3 million years ago. He's gone. He's left. And if you want to join Ram and do his service, you have to leave this world and go to Ayodhya. This is not the teachings of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. Teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who's Radha Krishna, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Radha Krishna Nahayanya, that Krishna's Leela, Krishna is here. He's not in the spiritual world. He's right here. And you can by the process of bhakti sadhana, Coming through the line of Lord Chaitanya, you can see Krishna. That's what it means. Aprakrit and prakrit. Means you can see the Lord is having his pastimes. You hear so many people describe, oh, Krishna's in Vrindavan. Even today he's having his rasa dance. Even today he's going on Gocharan Leela. He's having Julin and Holi. And Siddha Mahatmas, they see it. And sometimes they're meditating on Holi and they see the Holi pastime in their sarup. And then even they get colors on their dhoti. They get some abir and gulal. And they wake up and they say, whoa. And their shishya say, hey Guruji, what happened? You have all pink and red and blue and... Oh, acha. Oh. Because the leela is going on and he was assisting, he entered the leela because of his purity of his bhav. So this is only in Gaudiya Vaishnavas. Like when we say back home, back to Godhead, sometimes people think that means, oh, you have to leave this material world. Back home, back to Godhead. One meaning of that is make your home Godhead. Back home. Just like people come to Vrindavan. I meet them. They say, oh, Maharaj, we're going home now. Acha? I thought this was home. I thought Vrindavan was home. No. We're going to Patel Nagar. We're going to Lajpat Nagar. We're going home. Acha? So, okay, go back to home, but make your home Godhead. Now, how do you do that? By making the Krishna the center. Just like what did Prabhupada say about these temples? He said, these temples are Vaikuntha. Krishna's here, and bhakti is here. There's no difference. It's only a difference in consciousness. As soon as we change our consciousness, then we see Krishna everywhere. So this is, in Gaudiya Vaishnava's teaching is that we must realize Krishna right here, right now, in this very body. This is the teaching of Lord Chaitanya. He says, Krishna prema pradayate. I'm giving Krishna, there's nowhere in Gaudiya Vaishnava where it's saying, Lord Chaitanya is saying, I'm giving you Krishna in a post-dated check. Namo Mahavana Nyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate. Krishnaya Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gorja Sinama. He said, Krishna Prema Pradayate. That doesn't mean I'm writing you a post-dated check. Yes, after you die, you'll get a set of wings. You know wings? Like a bird wings. Here's a contract. Oh, you're a Gaudiya Vaishnava? Oh, okay. When you die, you'll get a set of wings, you know, like an angel. And you'll fly back to the spiritual world and then you'll get prema. This is not the teaching. But this is the teaching of the Christians, this is the teaching of everyone, the Muslims, and all the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, this is their teaching, that perfection is there. Here you do sadhana, you become siddha, you die, then you'll see what happens. But this is not Gaudiya Vaishnavism. That in this very body we'll have darshan, we'll enter the leela. And this is the whole teaching. And you see, that's why you have so many people that are living in Gaudiya Vaishnavism, and they're absorbed in the leela. That's why only in Gaudiya Vaishnavism you find so many books about Krishna's leela. Because they're meditating, they're entering it, they're seeing it. Hundreds and hundreds of books. In Gaudiya Vaishnavism there's so much, hundreds of books about the intimate pastimes of Radha and Krishna. And how are they seeing? Because they're seeing it. They're sitting in this body, they're entering the leela because the leela is going on in Vrindavan, and then they're writing about it. And this is the mandate. This is the mandate for every Gaudiya Vaishnava. It's because oftentimes the devotees get into this kind of abyss of complacency. They fall into a ravine of hopelessness or becoming hopeless. Or they get into this idea. Well, it's pie. They call it pie in the sky philosophy, like Christianity. Oh, be a good Christian and you'll be rewarded at the end. And someone can say, well, how do I know I'll be rewarded? Let me just enjoy. Let me be Ravana now and have a good time. Forget about Jesus and all this stuff. You're saying that's called pie in the sky. You know, pie, cake. Pie means like a cake. You know, cake? So you can't eat your cake now, but when you die, then you'll go to heaven. You can eat your cake. But this is not our teaching. And many people I've talked to on Gaudiya Vaishnava, they think that's our teaching. They think our teaching is pie in the sky. Oh, really serve the guru. Just keep serving the guru day and night. And then at the end of life, someone will come and hit you on the head. Doing, oh, there's Krishna. And I'm so-and-so gopa or so-and-so gopi. It's not like this at all. This is ridiculous. If you don't realize Krishna in conscious time, consciously in your sadhana, then it's not going to happen at the time of death. You'll die and take another birth. It's going to go on. This is how it happens. There's no such thing as, this is not our teaching. Nowhere you'll find this anywhere. Ado sharatata sarusanga anartha nivritti. This is a science. There's anartha nivritti. Then there's nishta. Then there's ruchi. Then there's asakti. Then there's bhav. Then there's prema. These are the stages. First there's biology 101, then there's biology 201, then biology 301, and then there's anatomy. Then there's, in the third year of college, you get human dissection. You know, because you're in medical school, right? You have to dissect, you know, human beings. In the West they do, for surgery. So there's a system to get a degree in medicine, right? You go first, you study physiology and then anatomy, and then you get go in a laboratory and you operate on old dead bodies and all these things, you know. So it's the same thing. This is systematic. This is a science. This is not some imaginary thing. Oh, I just be a good boy. If I'm really a good boy, then I'll get love of God. You know, you have to apply your intelligence. You have to do proper sadhana. We have so many scriptures explaining how to chant, how to read, how to meditate. And then right now, in this very body, we will realize Krishna. We have this human form of life as a vehicle for perfection. So we shouldn't be complacent or lazy. We have to get to it and realize it. Why? What? You? Oh, I'm 30. I'm 30 years old. Oh, I have a long time. Maybe by the time I'm 70, I'll realize Krishna. Let me keep poking along, as we say in English. I'll keep poking along, keep dragging along, keep crawling along. No, we should dynamically practice the limbs of bhakti. Dynamically surrender to the Guru and serve Him. And see the fruits that come. We should not be dull-brained. Every one of us should just be like, we should be like mini Akuras, or like clones. They have this term, clone. Should be like an Akura clone. We should emulate and follow His teaching. We should offer prayers to Vrindavan. We should offer prayers to Yamuna. Prayers to Krishna. As He's doing. He's on His way to Vrindavan in His chariot. So this body is also a chariot. Gita is explaining this body is a mano-retena. Mano-retena, the chariot of the mind. There's deha-retena, this body is a chariot. And who's the driver? The soul. So we're in a chariot and we're going to Vrindavan. Akura was in a chariot, a physical real chariot with 8 horses. And he was going Mathura to Vrindavan. So this chariot, this body is a vehicle for a vehicle. It's a gadi for perfection, right? Gadi, car. So we should be... And if you're driving in your car and you're going to Calcutta, you see signs. 1,000 kilometers, Calcutta. 500 kilometers, you know, road signs. So there's also road signs in bhakti. Nishta, ruchi, bhav, prem. You're driving your vehicle. Acha, anartha nivritti. Oh, kam krodh lo moha sab chordye. Acha. Now, nishta. Nishita bhakti. Oh, mind is very peaceful. I'm very enthusiastic. I'm feeling presence of Guru and Krishna. Nishta. And then ruchi. Ruchi means taste. Relishing something. These are the signs. So this, as Akura is driving his chariot, we also are driving. He's offering prayers, we should offer prayers. Yamuna Astakam, so many prayers. Goswami Astakam and Guru Vastakam. Guru Vastakam is a prayer to Guru. Samsara Dava, that's an Astakam. We offer prayers and we should have expectation. Yes, by Guru's grace, only by Guru's grace and only by the mercy of Gauranga, I will see, in this very life, I will see Krishna. Isn't that exciting? Just imagine. Now, if you think I'm going to see Krishna, if I qualify by my service attitude and by my surrender to Guru, because that's what Akura is telling in 10th canto, and what's going to happen when I see Krishna? Am I going to say, oh, Krishna? Just like if you're, just say, for example, like they have these things, these contests. They say, if you enter this contest, you can get one day, if you win this contest, you will get one day with the most beautiful movie star in Bombay. You'll get one day. I don't know, say there's some contest, you know, Airtel contest or something. One day with Amit Bachchan or whatever, you know. One day with some movie star. So then you're thinking, oh, if I win this contest, I'll spend 24 hours with, you know, Miss India. So then you start thinking, well, what will I do in those 24 hours? Of course, you shouldn't think about all that. But the idea is you'll be expecting, oh, well, I'll stay like this, or she'll, or maybe we'll go here together. Oh, I don't want to stay inside the whole time because I want to go outside in the street so my friends will see me. And they'll say, hey, didn't I see you with Miss India yesterday? Yeah. Yeah, she's my girlfriend. You know. Really? Wow, you're all right. You know. So you're planning. I won't just stay in the house all day for 24 hours. I'll go to my old high school and I'll show my teacher, see, I'm with Miss India, you know. So he's having different expectations. So we should think, someday I will see Krishna, and then what will he do? I'll say, oh, Hari Bhav Krishna. I'm Krishna Das. Oh, okay, Hari Bhav. Will I faint? Oh, Krishna. Like just like if you win that Miss India for the day and they say, and then they knock on the door, see, here she is. Oh, oh. So beautiful, so pretty, and you faint. Will you faint? Will you say, "Oh yes," or you keep your cool and say, "Oh yeah, I'm not too excited." You're so excited, you just open the door. "Oh yeah, please come in, sit down." You're trying to keep cool, and here have something to drink, and how are you? Nice words and some refreshments. So what will you, this is very captivating. When you're going to meet the most beautiful person, the most beautiful lady and man in the entire world, you are going to see them and are going to meet them. What will you do and what will they do? What will you say and what will they say? And that's all what Akura is doing in his mind. And if we have that kind of thinking, then where is the room for Maya? Because now we're just thinking, well, I'm going to meet Maya. And when I meet Maya, I'm going to say this. And she's going to say that. And I'm going to do this. And she's going to do that. It's called captivation of the mind. Then the mind, that's why his mind is described as samaman. Samaman means equilibrium of mind. Equilibrium. Because his mind was always saturated with thoughts of Krishna. So this is a type of thinking of Krishna. What does it mean, think of Krishna? So Akura is giving a thing of Krishna. Okay, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. He's blue. He's got wavy curly hair. He has lotus eyes. He plays a flute. And he's really sweet and he's very romantic. And he's dear Lalita and dear Odata and dear Prashant and dear Dirodata. And he has 64 qualities and he danced with the gopis. And, okay, that's thinking of Krishna. But this Akura is also telling us another way of thinking of Krishna. Think about when you will meet Krishna. What will he do and what will you do and what will happen to you? How will you feel and what transformations, what vikar or transformations will happen in your mind and heart? How will you change and reform? Of course, we're getting opportunity to meet Krishna every day. We're seeing Krishna's here in the temple. But we're so dull. Okay, pranams, Thakurji, Haribo, Radhi, Radhi, here. 5 rupees, goodbye. We can only see the Lord with the eyes of the heart. It's not possible to see the Lord with these eyes. Only with the eyes of the heart can the Lord be seen. And Akura is teaching that. His heart is absorbed in seeing the Lord. So he attained perfection. So Prabhupada is telling us, he's teaching the process of how to go to Vrindavan. By actually expecting that I will see the Lord. He's on the road. He's driving on the road in a chariot from Mathura to Vrindavan. He could have an accident. He could see some apsara. Some apsara might come on the side of the road and say, "Hey, where are you going in your chariot?" She might be hitchhiking. Maybe Urvasi comes on the road and starts hitchhiking. "Hey, give me a ride." Or like in India, they go like this. "Hey, give me a ride." In America, they go like this. Hitchhiking. "Give me a ride." So then Kura says, "Whoa. Haribo. Shh. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Shh. Oh, hello. Haven't I seen you from somewhere?" "Yeah, I'm Urvasi. Acha. Can you give me a ride in your chariot?" "Oh yeah, hop in." Then he goes off in the forest somewhere with Urvasi. He forgets about going to Vrindavan. But his idea is, so we're also going to Vrindavan. That is our destination. At least I should hope so. Our destination is Vrindavan. The association of Krishna, the service of Radha and Krishna eternally, and the darshan. So we don't want to get detoured or derailed, go off in the wrong direction. So we can follow the example. We should always be thinking, yes, I'm going to Vrindavan. And you may never even get in a car and go to Vrindavan. You may stay in Delhi for 100 years. That doesn't mean you don't go to Vrindavan. "Oh, Prabhu, you never go to Vrindavan. You're always doing your service in the temple." "Oh, but I go to Vrindavan every week. I'm a big devotee." Acha? It's like, people may think like that. "Oh, I go to Vrindavan every Purnima. I'm a big devotee." You just sit in the temple all day. Going to Vrindavan means your heart is going to Vrindavan. Put wheels on your heart. The heart must go to Vrindavan. Because as I said, going to Vrindavan is a change of heart. So Akura is teaching how this, this expectation, this prayers, what's going to happen. It's a very exciting thing. Oh, well, and you can think so many scenarios. Just like if you're thinking of Maya, you'll think of a variety of scenarios or settings or scenes. Oh, I'm going to meet this person and I'll say that and they'll do this. Or no, maybe I'll do it like this. Or no, maybe I'll say like this. But what if I say like this? Or what if I do like... And so much our mind is 1,000 miles an hour going in all these directions. So just spend one day thinking, well, what, if I met Krishna, what would I say? Or what if I only met Radharani? You can think of one day of just meeting Radharani, having darshan. What would happen? Or what would I do? I know, how about what if I meet just Krishna alone? And where would I meet him? Would it be on the banks of the Yamuna and Seva Kunj? Or would it be at Radha Kunj? Where would I meet him? How would I meet him? What was the circumstance? What would he be looking like? What would I be looking like? What would I be wearing? What would he be wearing? Or would I meet Radha and Krishna together? And where would I meet them? Would they be on their Julan in Barsana and Gavarvan? They're swinging on the Julan, and I would just come walking up through the woods, through the forest, and all of a sudden this is wonderful meditation. But whoever thinks like that? But Akura is trying to push the button on our mind, push the button, make the motor of the mind come on, turn on. Tune in, turn on to Krishna. So this is a very nice inspiration for our minds, to wake up our minds and start thinking and acting. Because Prabhupada says in the Bhagavatam, 10th canto, Akura is teaching the process to go to Vrindavan, the process for entering Vrindavan. And there's so many other things. He gave up his false ego. He jumped off his chariot. He rolled in the dust. Prabhupada says, as soon as he entered Vrindavan, he saw Krishna's footprints. He stopped the chariot. He jumped off the chariot and started rolling in the dust. He's a big king. He's a big Thakur, you know, he's a rich person. So this is another thing about entering Vrindavan. We have to give up all prestige and hankar. This, you know, hamta. I am great. You know, Akura is a great person. Oh, I'm in Vrindavan. There's Krishna's footprint. Oh, and he's rolling. Ha Govinda, Ha Govinda, Ha Govinda. So we come into Vrindavan. We drive from Delhi. We just go straight to the lassi stand. We drive right to the lassi stand in Banki Vihari. Oh, give me a lassi. Whoever gets out of the car and rolls in the dust, even once. Have you ever done it? No. Have you been to Vrindavan? Yes. How many times? 100 times. Oh, it's dirty. Oh, it's pigs. There's dogs. It's dirty. This sari costs 10,000 rupees, Baba. I'm not going to roll in the dust. Or if I'm going to roll in the dust, I'm going to take off my sari and put on a gumsha. Or a towel, a bath towel. What is all that? That's all hankar. I'm big. I'm special. This is costly. If you already know beforehand you're going to roll in the dust, then wear a cheap sari. Oh, I'm going to Vrindavan. And the first thing I do when I get to Vrindavan, I'm going to get out of the car and roll in the dust. So I better wear a cheap sari so if it gets crapped out, it doesn't matter. Or if it gets destroyed. So many times I've taken people on Parikrama and we go to different Leela Stalis. I say we should pay Dandabats here, Dandabat, or roll in the dust. And people maybe lie down. As soon as they stand up, they rub all dust, they rub it all off in a second. It comes on for a half a second and it's off in a half a second. It comes on, toot, and then toot. But Shiva, Lord Shiva, Brahma, Indra, the greatest devatas, they offer so many stutis, Sanskrit stutis in Puran, in Bhagavad Puran. Oh Krishna, please bless us that we can become a particle of dust in Vrindavan. Uddhava, Shiva, Brahma, Indra. What more? Who's bigger than those? That's very big personalities. They're praying, let us become a particle of dust in Vrindavan. And then we think, oh, this dust, I don't want this. So this is another thing Akura taught about entering Vrindavan. Humility, the mind, thinking of the Lord, and prayers, humility, freedom from false prestige. And worshiping the land of Vrindavan. He's not thinking, oh, what's his dirt? You know, he immediately jumped off his chariot and offered his head and his body. There's nothing more dear to us than our body. That is our very existence, is our body. And the dearest thing in our body is our head. How much time do people spend with their head? You know, this is the head. How much time? Ask a lady, how many hours does she spend with the head? You know, right? The head means the face. So first, but how many hours do we spend with the elbow? Do you spend much time with the elbow? Elbow is not very important, but the face is everything. For a woman, the face is everything. So he spends hours, this facial, that facial, the eyebrows, and this, that, you know, days and days and years. Like if you added up every hour, 5 hours a day on the face, you know, for 50 years, it's like thousands, lakhs and lakhs of hours people spend on their face. So the head and face, for men also, the hairstyle, this and that. The face and head is very important. It's the topmost important thing of our body, is our head. So then, when he came to Vrindavan, when Akura came to Vrindavan, he put his head in Krishna's footprints. And he rolled, and that head, the topmost, he didn't just get, like some people, they go to Vrindavan, they go like this. They get out of the car and they go like this. They take their hand, they touch. Okay, Jai Ho, Brajbhumi Ki Jai. At least they touch the dust on their head. Okay, this is enough. But you know, his head was on the ground and he's rolling. So this is the way. Enter Vrindavan. Any questions? Every jivatma has free will, choice. Your initial premise was that we have no control over our mind. But that is impossible statement. That statement is not correct. We have some, because at every moment we're exercising mind control and controlling our bodies. We're in the workplace and we're working and we have to, you know, go to the bathroom or something. So pushing is there to relieve our bowels. But we know the boss says, look, you sit here, you finish this work, and you at 12 o'clock, don't get up from the seat. So you think, oh, I have to pass water. Anyway, my boss told me. So you control. The body is pushing, but you control. So much control. We're controlling all the time. Man is walking down the street and he looks in the window. Oh, that's a nice watch. Oh, I really like to have that watch. If I just break this window, I can get that watch. Mind is telling me, I can break this window. But that's theft. I'll go to jail. And maybe I cut my hand when I put through the glass. So he controls his mind. His mind is telling, steal that watch. But he says, no. So this is not correct. We have so much control. So in the same way, the insect who flies into the fire, that's his free will. Because he's attracted by flame. His eyes are attracted. So, but he doesn't have much control. He doesn't have much control because his senses, as soon as the eyes see the flame, then the senses pull him. So then he gets burned. He gets destroyed. So same thing. Any living entity, the more sense control you exercise, the more you become free. And that's because the whole pivot of yoga is mind. When the mind is controlled, then you get mukti. So the only way actually to control the mind is to surrender the mind at the lotus feet of Krishna. Savai mana Krishna padaravindayor. Ambarish Maharaj is teaching, the mind must be fixed at the lotus feet of Krishna. Then Krishna's name is Rishika Isha, Rishikesh. You know, you have a Rishikesh. Rishikesh, Rishika means senses. We have the panch indriya, and then the mind. So there's six senses. So when we surrender to Krishna Samarpanam, then he's the Isha, Rishikesh. He's the Isha, the controller of the senses. He controls the senses. Alone we can control our senses to some extent, depending on the mode of nature we're in. If we're sattvic, we have more control. If we're rajasic, we have less control. But when you're a devotee, you're transcendental. You have absolute control. That's why a devotee is the most trustworthy, a person who's actually a pure devotee, he's the most trustworthy person. Because his senses are completely under the control of Krishna. But anyone who's not, because he's liberated. Jivan mukta suyuchate. He's liberated. So therefore, he'll never do the wrong thing or never misbehave. But anyone who's in sattvagun or rajagun or tamagun, any time there's an imbalance of those modes, he may be sattvic. He's a yogi, he's sattvic, he's vegetarian, but he's not liberated. So he may be some yogi, very sattvic, but if he gets in some, he goes somewhere or, you know, some, and he meets some lady all by himself and he's in a forest, then the rajagun may take over him. And then he may fall prey to maya, to illicit life. Although he's a good yogi. You see so many yogis, the yogi teachers, and they're famous, but then they fall down to rajagun. This happens. Because their sense, they are controlling by their own power, by their own tej. I am controlling the senses. But no one can control their senses. Vishwamitra Muni couldn't do it, Sobari Muni couldn't do it. All the greatest rishis throughout Puranas, the senses can only be controlled if he does it. So when you surrender to Krishna, engage in his service, then he controls the mind and senses. Then you don't go in the fire and get burned. Maya is the fire. And Maya is attracting all of our senses at every moment. And as soon as we're separated from Krishna, then Maya burns us. She consumes us. Just like the bug, the fly enters the fire and gets consumed, gets destroyed. So any sense, when any of our senses that are not controlled, they will destroy us. Any sense, the eyes, the ears, the nose, anything. The Gyanindriya or the Karmindriya, there's these working senses. But when but devotee, it's like a snake without its fangs. The senses are like a sarp with its fangs, you know, the teeth. But for when one surrenders to Krishna, Krishna breaks off the teeth. You know, imagine a snake with no teeth. And everybody, who cares? If a snake, even a cobra goes like this. But he's an old cobra. He has no teeth. And people play with it, put it around their neck. Cobra. But if he has teeth with the venom, the vish, then he's like, Haribol Prabhu. You know, keep a distance. So the senses are like sarps. You know, they're ready to bite the jiva. They're ready to bite us, annihilate us. That's why it's called vishayi. You know, there's this term, vishayi. Vish means poison. A vishayi is someone who's enjoying, he's a vishayi. We say vishayi means he's enjoying the senses. But vish means poison. So if you enjoy poison, what will happen? You'll get sick. And you may even die. If you take enough poison, you'll die. If you take a little poison, you get sick. So if you take a little sense gratification, you get sick. If you take a lot of sense gratification, you become annihilated and take animal birth. But when we sarvapadi vanir muktam, tatpara twaina nirmalam, rishikesha rishikena, sevanam bhakti uchate. All the upadi, when we surrender to Krishna, we have so many names, Gupta and Agarwal and this gotra and that gotra, and I'm a Bhargava gotra and I'm Kasyap and this and that. As soon as you surrender to Krishna, what happens? What is your name? Das. Everybody's name is Das. Just like sometimes the police would get some complaint or something in L.A. when I was in Los Angeles. So they come to the temple and they say, listen, we have some complaint. We're looking for Mr. Das. Acha, Mr. Das. Well, there's 300 Mr. Das's here. Which one? Oh, I don't know, but we got some complaint about because somebody, he was driving one of your temple cars. He went very fast. He was speeding through some neighborhood and some lady called up and complained. Or stop that guy, and she said, what's your name? He said, Mr. Das. And then he left, and then she called the police, and said, Mr. Das is driving his car too fast, a temple car through the neighborhood, and it's a danger for the kids, you know, some passionate devotee or something. So the police are saying, where's Mr. Das? Oh, there's 300 of them. So when you become a devotee, then there's sarvapadi vinir muktam, you become vinir mukti, you become free from all designation. Everyone's Das, Dasi and Das. So this is the idea that we can never control our senses. Only Krishna can control our senses. There's no one in this world can control their senses. It's impossible. But if we surrender to Krishna, then impossible becomes possible. Gatana agatana patiyasi shakti. There's one shakti of Krishna, it's called gatana agatana patiyasi shakti. The ability to make the impossible possible and the possible impossible. So God has that power. Is that when we first joined in 1975, we took Diksha in LA, and we would meet our old friends, and they say, so, you know, Kem Chow, what are you doing? What's going on? What are you doing? What's your lifestyle? Oh, we follow these four principles, and we're vegetarian, this and that. And you tell them about your lifestyle that, you know, there were brahmacharis. They said, what? What, are you crazy? How is it possible? Really? In India, it's not such a big thing because many people are sattvic and they follow these religious principles because it's still some Vedic culture. But in America or Germany or England or something, they can't believe it. They say, what? How is it possible that you're not chasing women, you're not boozing up, and you're not smoking pot and eating? Is it possible? And they say, listen, it's only possible by His mercy, Bhagavan Kripa, Guru Kripa Kevalam, right? And they say, I don't know. I don't know how it's happening to myself. We would tell them when we first joined. We say, and they say, you must be brainwashed. They would say, our friends would say, you must be brainwashed. I say, I don't know, whatever it is, it's working. Whatever it is, I chant Hare Krishna, I study this philosophy, I do a little guru seva, take a few chapatis, rice and dal, and I feel like really happy. And I don't feel that, I'm not like going crazy, you know, we go down to the beach and do Harinam. So what's this, some magic? This is some magic. This is Bhagavan Kripa. Living, tangible, pratyaksha dharma. Krishna says in 9th chapter of Gita, pratyaksha vagamam dharmyam. Pratyaksha vagamam dharmyam. He says, this dharma is pratyaksha. It's manifest, it's realized, it's tangible, it's touchable. It's not imaginary. Or you just think that you're liberated. Or you just think that you're different, but you're really not. No, it's pratyaksha. What's that verse? Rajaguya, was it? Rajavidya Rajaguyam Pavitram Paramambhavan Uttamam. It's Uttam Pavitra. So this is the process, transformation of consciousness from dark to light. Krishna consciousness. This is bhakti, means this is prem dharma, the religion of love. If we can learn to love Krishna, we can love everyone. Love is, but when there's no love, then there's so competition, hate, hatred, envy, competition. This arises and takes hold of one in the absence of love. But when love is manifesting and growing in the heart, then envy leaves, competition leaves, hatred leaves. Because like in our society, we have something called aparad. Someone makes an aparad or makes an offense. It's because aparad means there's no love. There is no love in the heart. When love is there, because aparad means, does a mother ever make an aparad to her baby? Does a mother ever offend her child? Because in love, there's no such thing as aparad. A mother loves her child. She'll give her life for her child. She'll do anything for her child. Because why? Because love. It's prem sambandha. The relationship is based on love. So there's no envy. She'll give her own life. There's no competition. There's no a devotee is supposed to have this type of love. Love for Krishna. So if you love Krishna, how can you have any hatred for a devotee? Any devotee. Any big, small, black, white, anything. But if any aparads come, if envy comes, competition comes, oh, he's better, I'm better, that means that there's not a drop of bhakti. Bhakti is love. Bhakti, priti, and prem. It's a matter of how thick it is, how condensed it is. You have milk, and then you have condensed milk, and you have burfi. You cook down the milk, it gets thick. It becomes like condensed milk. And then you cook it more, and all the water goes out and becomes like burfi. Oh, sweet. So there's bhakti is like milk, and priti is like kheer, and prema is like burfi. Very condensed. So if you have just a little bit of bhakti, aparads are finished. There's no aparad. It's not possible. They're incompatible. So if someone is still suffering from aparads, oh Prabhu, I make this offense, I think offensively, that means that you haven't caught one drop of bhakti. One drop of bhakti has not dropped into your heart. So, thank you. Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam ki.